Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, this has been a while, hasn't it? How are you? I am so sorry I disappeared off the face of the earth with no explanation. But the next hour and a half, you'll find out why and what's been happening in my world for the last year. It's been a year and a couple of weeks or something since my last podcast was aired. But I hope you are all good. Thank you if you reached out to me in that time to see what on earth was going on. And if you haven't noticed, then I'm really glad your life is so full. And I do not take offence at all. But so here is what I've been doing. Oh, and just quickly, welcome to the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy. We are golding.com. And also the reason, well, one of the reasons I've disappeared recently, our other sponsor is the amazing Proud S. I'm going to tell you all about Proud S in a podcast, our next podcast, hopefully, if we record it. Me and my best friend Nicole started a business, a hair and beauty care business. I had Nicole on the podcast talking about her journey overcoming her cocaine addiction and the trauma that she experienced in her childhood. It's over 2 episodes. If you haven't listened to it, I would highly recommend you listening to it, because she has done something not many people can, I think, giving up a serious drug addiction completely on her own. And it's just a fantastic story. And I can't remember if we spoke a bit about Proud S in that. But anyway, we're going to talk about it more. But Proud S, the bottom line of it, I guess, for want of a better phrase, is cotton dries your hair out. And if you sleep silky, you sleep on a silky Proud S pillowcase or wrap your hair at night, it transforms your hair. And it's also really good for your skin. They're hypoallergenic. Everyone needs a Proud S pillowcase, and you're not going to go wrong wrapping your hair either. We've also just launched silky lined beanies, so you can keep your head warm and your hair's not going to stick up when you take it off, or it's not going to mat your hair. They're amazing. Anyway, proudess.com, proudess.com. We are going to change it to double S, but I don't know if that would have been done by the time you hear this, so just to be on the safe side. Anyway, that's enough plugging. Here is, oh, and I got my old mate Scroobius to do this with me, because I messaged him and I was like, should I just talk on my own for an hour, or will it be more fun if I get you involved? And he was like, I'm always up for a chat. So here you go, enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side.
Work.
So I don't know if I've told you that I manifested a yoga studio.
Oh, right.
I don't know if I've told you that.
No, you've not told me that.
Because I love yoga.
Yeah.
And I don't do it enough, because at my gym, they do like one class a week that I can go to, which I love. But it's a more, to appeal to like the gym crowd, it's more like of a stretch session rather than a yoga session. And I do really like the spiritual stuff with yoga. Am I taking my glasses off?
I just did.
But I was like, where I live, there isn't a yoga studio within walking distance, which, I mean, obviously I'm very privileged to have lots of stuff within walking distance of where I live. But I was like, I don't want to have to get in the car and drive somewhere, because then that just adds time and adds...
And for some reason, it feels anti, like, the spiritualness of yoga. I don't know why. To me, exactly. For some reason, driving there, it doesn't feel very in touch with the earth as walking there does. Yeah.
Is that everywhere's residence, because I live in London, so it's just a bit of a ball ache. So I was just thinking, I wish there was a yoga studio that I could just walk to. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, a few weeks ago, one opened up just like 10 minutes walk from my house.
Amazing.
Near Snaresbrook Station, called Studio East.
Okay, you've doxed yourself there. So you're within 10 minutes walk of Studio East. Got ya.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Anyone who wants to come visit, just a 10-minute radius. You can do a rough circle there. Figure it out from there.
Well, anyway, it's really lovely and I love it. So I've done it this morning and I feel really lovely.
Ah, great. I've been...
just makes me feel better.
I've been struggling with yoga recently because I've done my back in.
Have you done your back in?
I did it in exercising a couple of weeks back. And then just as it was getting a bit better, I got the flu. So I was in bed for a few days. And then when I was getting over that, as you know, like when you have to have a break from exercising, you're quite excited to get back. So I jumped straight back into my workout and forgot I'd had a bad back previously and I wrecked it again. So need to take it nice and slow. But yeah, I'm not the best at yoga anyway because I'm a big, long idiot. And I'm not that flexible. So... I really enjoy it. I enjoy, if I do it regularly, I enjoy the, you know, how flexible I do get. But then, it's at the moment, half of the poses I do feel almost embarrassing because I'm so far from being, because of the injury, you know. But yeah.
But also, yoga is very much about you do things at your own pace.
Yeah.
And it is just, if you do it every day... Mm-hmm. Then eventually,
yeah, 100%.
You will improve.
Yeah,
you know.
I was doing it every day.
I suppose.
I got into it when I was in isolation in Canada, and my brother sent me a couple of videos to do these specific sun salutation A and sun salutation B, and it was just really good for keeping sane as well in an Airbnb on your own. I was doing it every day and got far more flexible than when I started. And yeah.
How long were you there for? Was it?
Yes, just over 7 months, yeah.
Wow.
And I still didn't get that flexible, if I'm honest.
It all feels like a bit of a weird dream now, doesn't it, all that?
Yeah. I mean...
shut up in the house and...
It's weird, yeah, it's weird how quickly time flies and how quickly things passed, which, you know, lead us nicely on to. It's been a while since you did a podcast, isn't it?
It's been a year since. I mean, I did actually record with Leon and Si Solve Nothing a couple of weeks ago, and that was the first time I'd done anything podcast-wise for, well, it's about a year now.
It's weird, isn't it? Because, I don't know, it's, again, just to keep the comparison to COVID alive, it feels longer and shorter than that all at once, if you know what I mean, somehow. Yeah. It feels like it's been years, like your podcast seems so far in the distance, if you know what I mean, but it's because of how much you've been through in that year, I guess.
Yeah, a lot has happened, and I kind of, that's why I wanted, because I've really missed doing the podcast, and I never thought that I was going to stop doing it. It just all kind of happened, really.
Yeah.
But I felt like I wanted to come back to it, but I did feel like I wanted to kind of explain what's been going on, because it did just disappear.
Yeah.
And I did have a few people reach out and be like, "Oh, are you." What's going on?
What's going on? Where have you gone?
So I just kind of wanted to explain, but I did. I said to you, should I? Because I was talking to Buddy Peace about it. I mean, this was months ago now, and he was saying just go for a nice walk, sit in a nice field, and record it because people like the background of birds and stuff. And I thought, oh yeah, I can do that. But then obviously that's just not happened, and now it's too cold for me to be going and sitting in a field. So I was like, would you wanna? Because I just thought it might be a bit weird if I'm kind of just saying, so this is
Oh, it's good to have prompts and things as well, isn't it? It makes sure you cover everything a bit clearer and more specifically. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, so we did my last podcast. I had to pull because the woman that I did it with mentioned a member of her family who wasn't very happy about what she said. Mm. So, literally the day it got released, or the day after it got released, I had an email from a person basically saying that they wanted it to be taken down or they'd be taking legal action or something. I mean, to be honest, I was a bit like,
I remember that.
Whatever she said wasn't that bad anyway. It was all complete. But I was like, I don't really want to get involved in this.
I heard it before it got taken down, and just from my kind of outside perspective, I have this with Hardcore Listen every now and then. When they tell stories and fully name people, it's always that worry. Or when it's clear who they're talking about, it's always concern, because there is kind of a grey line in podcasting. In the media, you tend to have to reach out to people. Like, it's why all documentaries will always have, we reached out to this person and they had no comment, or at time of broadcast, we haven't heard anything. There's always those kind of things, because that is the kind of the etiquette there. And podcasting has no specific etiquette. So,
When I was, because I had to edit it because it was quite a sensitive podcast. Mm. So I had edited it, and I do remember thinking, should I cut that out? Mm. Because it wasn't really relevant to anything. It was just basically her moaning about someone, really. But I kind of, I sent it to her and she'd okayed it. And I thought, well, it's her story.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but obviously, so as soon as I got this email, I let the person know, and she was like, just take it down, because I was like, I can edit it, I can now re-edit it and just cut that bit out, but she was like, no, just take it all down. So I was like, fair enough. So then that happened, drama. And I'd kind of lined up a couple of guests and everyone had just blown me out for whatever reason, you know. And then I was having all my health issues, so I was waiting basically for an appointment with the hospital that I'd been put under, UCLH, about my endometriosis and cysts. And I had a phone call from them to say that I needed to have, they were going to review my case, but it was probably going to be a few months until I had this appointment, basically, but they were going to deal with it. And then I just basically wasn't well. I just, my health issues meant that I kept getting pains, and just generally I just felt a bit crappy. And where it was coming up to Christmas, I mean, everyone's busy, but I was a bit like, maybe this break has been, maybe I just need to take a break for a minute. And I didn't intend to not do it, I just thought, because previous to that, whenever I didn't have a guest lined up, or I wasn't sure what was going on, there was a certain amount of panic, or like, I've really got to sort this out because this is really important. But this time it was just a bit like, do you know what, maybe this is the universe.
Or when you've got any kind of...
take a break for a minute.
When you've got any kind of extended chronic pain or illness or whatever, I do think any pressures you can take off yourself, it's wise to take them off. Anything that you're in control of. And things like the podcast, as much as it's fun and it is important, I think you've had some amazingly important conversations on here. It is something it is a pressure that you're in control of, at least, that you can turn around and go. And with your kids, with work, with all these other things, you're not in control of that. So you can't take those pressures off. So I think, And I know at that point it was building and building pain-wise, but that was also getting on top of you mental health-wise, because it is relentless, and you do start to kind of go, oh, for fuck's sake, where's, you know, when's this going to end? When's this going to get fixed? So, I think it's an important bit of self-care to go, here's some pressure I'm in control of. I'm going to stop that to kind of relieve everything else a little bit.
Because I did also, around this time, have started a business with my best friend. Because, you know, I'm not doing enough. So I thought, why not? But I'll talk more about that.
Yeah, we'll get into that
later. And then Christmas came, and I was unfortunately very sick over Christmas.
Yeah.
And while I was sick over Christmas, I kind of made some decisions with regards to my personal situation with my children and their father.
We'll get into that as well. There's a lot of bullet points here that we're putting aside and we'll come back to it.
there was all that. And then I just felt like I was waiting for this operation. Mm-hmm. And so the whole year I'd been told that I was going to have my hysterectomy in the December.
Yeah.
So I'm getting mixed up.
I'm sure it was originally end of November, and then it moved to December, and then
I'd had the phone call previous November saying that I was going to get sorted out. I had an appointment the following June, mm-hmm. which was last June, which said that it should be about 6 months. So in my head, I'm thinking it's December. Mm-hmm. So now I'm on the phone. I got a phone call from the hospital because I'm in contact with them, emailing them. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really getting any response. And I was just saying, look, obviously it's coming up to Christmas. I've not heard anything. I assumed that I'd get some notice of having major surgery, you know, a bit closer to the week before. And I got a phone call in the November saying, have you started your injections yet? And I was like, what injections? And they were like, you need to have estrogen blocking injections before you have the hysterectomy, mm-hmm. because they basically need to stop the spread of the endometriosis, because the endometriosis feeds on estrogen. Mm-hmm. And I think it just makes everything shrivel up a bit. Mm. So it's easier to get out, essentially. Yeah. So I was like, no, I don't know about this. So then I found out I needed to have these injections for at least 3 months. So obviously that was going to then set the surgery back to February. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, February's only another couple of months. I've waited this long, you know. So then I started having the injections and I was okay, because I was a bit worried, because they put you into a false menopause. And mm-hmm. I was just worried that I was just going to become a nutcase. Mm. But I didn't. And my kids actually said that I seemed to be happier.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was the fact that I felt like I was on the path to the end now, because I'd started the injections and I thought, well, I've got to have the injections are for 3 months. So I've got to have the surgery in 3 months, you know, because they've started me on the path. Mm-hmm. I've always had problems with my hormones. Maybe my estrogen, made too much estrogen or something. I don't know. So I was all right. I was a bit more emotional.
I was going to say, it still like impacted you, didn't it? Still, yeah.
It did. It didn't but again, that's negatively.
It's hard to gauge.
As badly as I thought
yeah,
it could.
It's hard to gauge if that was the stress of everything else or a direct result of, you know, if it keeps getting pushed back, then it's hard to say. Is the estrogen jabs affecting me, or is the fact that I thought this was going to be over by now affecting me?
Yeah.
Can I just pause you though? And can we rewind back? Because you've kind of jumped into the hysterectomy straight kind of off the bat. How was that as a decision? Like when, because again, with the endometriosis, it was kind of discussed for a long time of what the options are. And you kind of had to almost fight a bit to get put down for the hysterectomy, right? And because again, it's a big thing as a woman, it's a big decision to make.
It
so
is a big
how
thing.
Was that for you?
But when I was in hospital the year before, when I was in hospital for a week in the most pain I've ever been in my entire life, I just remember thinking, I just want everything out. That's all I want, is everything out. I'm not having any more babies. I'm 45 now. So I'm heading into the menopause relatively soon, regardless. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about taking HRT. I wasn't even worried about the surgery, really. I just wanted an end to it. Mm. And I knew that if they, through doing podcasts and talking to people about endometriosis, I knew that if they were to just drain the cysts and get rid of the cysts, because I had one 10 centimetre cyst and then two other cysts, which basically made 10 centimetres that were touching on my ovaries, that were bending my ovaries in front of my womb. So if you imagine, when you look at a picture of a uterus, you kind of, there's the ovaries are kind of on the outside pointing out, mm-hmm. like a deer's head almost, like antlers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But because the cysts were so big, like the cysts were bigger than my actual uterus.
Right, wow.
Like individually.
Yeah.
And they bent my ovaries so they were round in front of my uterus. So one of the doctors actually said, we don't understand why you're not in pain the whole time.
Mm.
Which I wasn't, so that, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
But so this was at one hospital. They were willing to drain the cysts and get rid of them, and then they laser the endometriosis off.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't then mean to say in a few years I won't be back in the same boat, because the cysts and the endometriosis will just come back.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the hospital that I asked to get to refer to, which was UCLH, had said, we can do that or we can just take everything out. Yeah. And we do recommend that as what to do, basically, because then that just means you have one surgery and it's done. Whereas if you have the stuff removed and the laser and then it comes back, then you've got to have another surgery or, you know.
And again, I can understand how it's, on their part, they have to make sure you're certain on it. And it's a big, big decision in a lot of situations. But as you say, you're into your 40s. You've got two great kids. They cost enough as it is, so there's no particular plan to emotionally or financially. There's no particular plan to have anymore. You are raising them on your own, essentially. So again, there's things like that where it, I guess, it kind of made it an easier decision than it might be for some women.
In
the same situation or at the same age or whatever else. It's like
you've, funnily enough,
you're done with it. You're done with all that inside stuff.
Exactly. And at my gym, there's a calf opposite, and I know them in there. And I went in, and obviously I've not been there for pretty much this whole year.
Mm.
And one of the girls, I've told them what I've had done, and one of the girls said that she's basically in the same situation. Now, she's young. I don't know how old she is, but I'd say she was late 20s.
Mm.
But she suffers terribly with her endometriosis. But I was a bit like, obviously, if you want to have a family, you don't have the option to have a hysterectomy.
Mm.
But I don't really know what else they can do. So it was an easy decision for me because I did, when she said to me that I could have the hysterectomy, there was a bit of me that was like, oh. And I did a dance cast recently, and she's all very much about female empowerment and touching your fanny and everything. And she was saying about something about your ovaries. And I was like, oh, I haven't got any, you know, it is, even though I don't feel any less of a woman or a mother or anything, it is a bit weird when I actually really think about it.
Yeah,
it is a bit weird. Like I haven't got a cervix anymore.
Yeah, no matter
how. I had
how
a letter from my doctor about having a smear test, and I was like, I phoned him up. I was like, I haven't got a cervix.
Yeah,
so
I can ring the hospital up and see if they've still got it, and you can have a look there. But
yeah. I was going to think, should I just book in and then see how long they take to figure out what they
can't. No, but
I don't know where it's gone.
It's interesting though, because I think you're right there. No matter how rational and comfortable you are with it, you've still grown up in a society that in some way puts so much of womanhood on those things, so there's going to be some level of subconscious kind of oh you know, that's a bit that's a bit different, isn't it, no matter how much you can rationalize it and all that. So I understand there being some level of, it's weird, isn't it, I've not got those bits anymore. I mean, it's another discussion altogether, but it goes into the ludicrousness of how we define what a woman is in, you know.
And it did, I was a bit like, would it? I mean, obviously I know that I'm a woman and I know that all that stuff doesn't matter, but it was still a bit like, oh, but what makes a woman then?
Yeah.
In some people's eyes.
In some people's eyes,
you know,
exactly.
Because I don't have those bits.
Yeah.
And I was a bit like, what's going to happen to the space? You think it's such a big, I mean, it's such a small thing.
Yeah.
But because it is, you think it's such a big thing because of what it can do and what it means. And I was expecting like this gaping hole.
Yeah.
And everything might just fall out.
It's going to be,
nothing's keeping it up.
Far more hungry. You're going to be far hungrier all the time because there's just this gap to fill.
Well, I don't have to go to the toilet as much.
Yeah.
Because obviously my bladder's got more room.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And when, I mean, obviously, as women get older, your pelvic floor muscles and especially after having children as well, if you have natural births, it can screw your bladder control and stuff. And during the week before I got my period, I couldn't jump with my legs open. So at the gym.
And you love like jumping with your legs open. Such is one of your main things, isn't it?
Exactly. But like I couldn't do, I could jump with my legs sharp, but I couldn't jump with them open. So you imagine like skipping or star jumps or plate jumps or whatever. I just couldn't do it because I'd essentially wet myself.
Yeah.
But what someone said was it's because your womb is filled with blood, your bladder has less room. And therefore can't contain...
Wow.
Because it was literally just the week before I got my period.
Yeah,
the rest of the time I was fine.
Yeah.
So obviously I don't have that issue anymore.
Yeah.
Although I haven't really tested it out properly because I'm still not really back at the gym properly.
Yeah.
But as far as so far, so good.
And you know, you need to build up to these big milestones, don't you? Well, you need to make a big deal of the first day you get to jump with your legs open again.
Exactly.
Maybe do it on Christmas or New Year's Day. New Year's Eve at midnight.
New Year's Eve at midnight.
Big jump with your legs open just to see how it all works.
Oh, but yeah, so going back.
Yes.
So I had these injections for 3 months. I had them all booked all in at the doctor's.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I was getting my last one, she was like, oh, have you got a date or whatever for your surgery? And I was a bit like, well, not yet, no. So she was like, do you want to make another appointment just in case? Because I had to carry on having the injections. I couldn't then stop, because if I did stop, I'd have to then wait and then start them again and have them for 3 months before I had the surgery. And I did say to her, how long can I have them for? Because they're usually used for treating cancer patients.
Right.
Because they stop, because certain cancers feed off estrogen.
Mm.
So some people would have them if they had cancer. I don't think that she'd given them to anyone before because I was having a hysterectomy.
Mm.
But she did say you can carry on. There's no like end date really, because I was thinking I didn't know if I could only have them for 3 months.
Mm.
Anyway, so I got in touch with the doctors and she said that I'd been penciled in for a date in May. So I was like, well, I've had these injections, so surely I should be getting seen in February. But she was like, well, you're penciled in for May. So to have more injections, which I did have, my hysterectomy happened on the 7th date that I was given.
I was going to say, talk to me a little bit about getting that news, because I know it hit you fucking hard initially, because you'd kind of got through Christmas and that with the fact that it's happening in Feb, and then although May isn't that far, like on the grand scheme of things it's not that much further, but it's a lot further when you're already kind of behind what you were expecting.
It was nearly 6 months later than December, which is what I'd been told originally.
Mm.
I think the thing for me was, I understand the NHS is in crisis. I know it's not the woman who was phoning me up every time telling me that my surgery had been moved.
Mm.
It wasn't her fault. And I really pity her for having to do the job that she does, is having to tell people in my situation or in worse. I mean, the first time it got moved, she told me that it was because they had patients, like cancer patients or patients that were in more serious condition than I was. And of course I understand that. But start open with that. We're really sorry, but your surgery's been cancelled because we've had to treat people that are in worse situation than you. That's fine, I understand that. Rather than just, your date's been moved for another 2 months, you know, because then you just get angry and upset.
And it's tough, isn't it? Because as much as you can... And again, we've talked a lot over this period about fucking God bless the NHS, fuck the Tories for putting them in such a crisis.
Yes.
But equally, I could also see, I know I spoke to you kind of in despair, kind of saying, look, I know I'm being pushed for more important stuff, but I am a single mum raising two kids on my own.
Yeah.
So when I have these moments of huge pain, I'm kind of fucked because I can't look after the kids. I have to go to hospital. I have to hope that someone is around to take the kids in. I think in every time you've had to go to hospital, it's been your sister or your parents, you've been lucky enough that they've been around because their dad hasn't necessarily been around on that short notice or whatever else. Yeah. So it's not like you're just having it out of choice. Like, it is a necessity and it is important. So I can understand how it's tough, because you can at the same time go, all right, other people need it more, I get it. But then at a certain point, you also have to go, but I need it too. I need it.
Like, in the end, I was like, I appreciate that obviously I'm not as sick as some other people are, but my situation is that I'm the sole carer for my children. Mm. I'm self-employed. So when I'm sick, I'm not getting paid if I'm not working, you know, and I can't wait any longer. Plus, I've been having these injections for, you know, however long. One of them did get moved. I think my last date got moved because of the doctor's strike, which, again, I was in full support of the doctor's strikes. And I was like, I'm not going to moan about that. But even so, it's still
heartbreaking.
That I've, you know, because I think it was, the thing that did me was that I was just not in any control of what was happening, that I needed it to happen because it was affecting my life to such great extent. I couldn't make any plans to do anything socially, because every time I made a plan, I got sick and I couldn't do it. So I just didn't go out. I stopped going to the gym. I think Christmas Eve was my last time I went to the gym, because I was sick over Christmas, and it took me a long time to get over that. And then that's a lie. I think I did like a week in February where I kind of felt all right. And then my pain started again. And then, so basically that was it. I hadn't worked out, which, now I've gone back to exercising, I realise how much of an effect it has on my mental health. I mean, there's a lot of things which I'll talk about, which I've kind of gone back to since I've had the surgery, but exercise really does help me. Mm. So I wasn't doing that. It was the uncertainty of if, because I was constantly leaving, not knowing if I was going to get pain that day and end up going back to hospital, or how much codeine I was going to have to take.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt shit for the kids, because I don't want to get emotional. It really affected them. Mm. Like, sorry.
No.
When, do you know, I was worried about me having the surgery, because the time that I was really bad and I went into hospital and they were here and they saw how much pain I was in, that was really hard for them, obviously, because it's hard when you see a parent upset and in that much pain and that not knowing what was going to happen to me. And even though my surgery was going to correct all of that, it's still quite a scary thing, obviously, going into the hospital. And I suppose I didn't know whether, even though I was like, once I've had this surgery, I'm going to be fine. But they might have not really realised that, because what if I have the surgery and something else goes wrong? Or what if I have the surgery and it doesn't work, or, you know.
And they're kids.
So
they're kids. Exactly. There's not as much rationalising anyway. For an adult, it's hard to go, well, there's a good chance it's all going to be okay. For a kid, it's like you've got no control over how you feel about that and in that situation.
And it was just the day-to-day, like, you know, I get little twinges of pain and they're just like, well, you're all right. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably nothing. And to be honest, I was in hospital twice. I was admitted twice. And the last time, it would have been 2 years ago. Would it have been 2 years ago? It wasn't last November, it was November before. So it's been a long time that I haven't been in that much pain, because I have been able to manage it at home, thankfully. And I don't know if I've just got used to it. I don't really understand how pain works. It was when I had my surgery, the consultant came to see me the next day, and she said that she doesn't understand how I'd carried on, basically, because it was so fucked when she looked in there.
Yeah.
But my ovaries would be twisted by the cysts. That was what the pain was.
Mm.
So, and that, it was just absolutely awful. But I don't know if my body did just get used to it, because it still would have been happening. Mm. I imagine. Maybe it wasn't happening.
But then it's the uncertainty of it, isn't it? I know that was a big thing that troubled you a lot at the time as well, of not knowing. Like, you can't explain any of it.
Yeah.
Like, if they're saying you should be in more pain, and then you're not, and then you are, and then you're not, and then you are. It's like, well, they can't understand it, so you're certainly not going to be able to understand it.
And that was the thing that I found most frustrating, is no one could really answer any of my questions.
Mm.
I couldn't get a date for when I was going to have the surgery. No one knew why it hurt so much. No one knows why I've got or had massive cysts and endometriosis. You know, it's just a lot of, we don't know, but we're going to help. I mean, they did help. And I had an amazing experience at the hospital. I was in surgery for 4 hours. I was expecting it was going to be an hour.
Yeah.
And I'd be back doing the school run on Monday. But it was all a lot more than...
Before we get into the surgery... I need to tell you something, and I'm going to send you a timestamp for this, because you need to rewatch the video of this back and maybe post it on socials. Because when you started crying, I don't know why, some kind of filter came on your Zoom and fireworks started going off around you. No word of a lie. Genuinely, fireworks started exploding. Don't know if it's because you found your fate or something, but I'm sitting here trying to be nice and supportive as you're in tears, and genuinely fireworks are going off around you on the screen.
It's when you do a 2 thumbs up, I think.
Oh, right.
They start.
There we go. Oh, no,
that's just come up as a thumbs up.
So maybe do a wave.
I did this the other day.
You did something, and it was just such insane timing that it just caused...
I was on a Zoom call the other day, and by the end of it, it was all like really like holistic and stuff. And I did something, and all fireworks went off.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was just amazing timing that you're getting very emotional, and I'm, you know, emotional too, because you're my dear friend, and the girls mean a lot. But just trying not to laugh as fireworks start going off. But yeah.
But that is one thing about that is interesting that I feel more sad about what I've been through when I feel how it affected the girls.
The girls, yeah.
And it's like I don't have that sympathy. I mean, I do have sympathy for myself.
Yeah.
But it affects me more when I think about how sad it was for them.
I was talking about this. I've recorded a podcast with Rosie Marcel recently, and there was numerous points where she has done stuff because of her daughter and for her daughter, which she... you should do for yourself anyway. Or Nick Frost is a prime example. He's lost a load of weight recently. And it's because he doesn't like the idea of dying young and leaving his kids without a dad. And it's like, well, I didn't want you to die young either. Like, you know, you should be looking after yourself for you. But it's mad it how that stuff hits you, isn't it? That, yeah, it means all the more.
You need
but,
a reason other than yourself to do something or feel something.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, it's weird. But let's... get on to the surgery then, because it was a lot. It went well, but
it was a lot.
You
it
had to recover.
Well.
You know, I was on your case constantly of taking, not rushing anything.
Yes, you were. And I didn't. Well, I know I did. Actually, that's a complete lie.
You did.
Yep.
Yeah, you did.
So UCLH was amazing. It's like a private hospital. You can ask to get referred anywhere.
Mm.
Get referred to UCLH. It's lovely. I mean, you can't drive there or anything because it is smack bang in the centre of the West End. But it was so nice. All the staff were lovely. Sorry, you might hear the cat now purring. I've got a kitten. She purrs really loudly. So, the surgery went fine. I got there. I think I had to do a bowel prep. Have you ever done one of those?
No.
Oh, God. You don't want to.
What was it? I might do.
Well, you just basically, you have to, it empties your bowel, so you just sit on the toilet. I had to do it for 24 hours before, and that was just awful, because you can't have anything left in you.
Right.
So that was not pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that the day before, and then I had to go in, I think I had to be in for 11 or half 10. And I just sat there for quite a long time. I don't think I got called. I think I got called down at 4. And I just remember thinking, when the doctors did finally come to see me, I just thought, if they say now they can't do it because they haven't got time, I don't know what I'm going to do because I can't go through the bowel prep again.
Yeah.
I'll just have to not eat anything until
they're ready.
Do it.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, there was a woman on my ward the next day who'd been in that situation. She was there at 7:30 in the morning. At 7:30 at night, they told her that it couldn't happen that day. So she'd been called back the next week. But thankfully, it had been done the next week. But anyway, yeah, so the surgery went really well. I had some on my appendix, which they had to get rid of, endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
The cysts, they got out. Everything went fine. But yeah, it was 4 hours long, and I was just really shocked that it took so long. I didn't really know what I thought, but I just thought it'd be about an hour and then that'd be it. But
it's also weird that you don't really know going in, isn't it? Because of how rushed it all is and because of how much of just the thing it is, they don't really tell you it's going to be a four. They tell you when you're going to be in it. I remember that because you didn't know if, like with the girls, you didn't know when you were going to be out, how long you were going to be in.
Yeah.
They were saying, again, you know.
I think they said it'd be a day, maybe 2 days, depending. Also, they don't really know until they go in to know what it's like.
Yeah.
Because the endometriosis is quite sticky. So if things are stuck together, it obviously takes them a bit longer to... But luckily, I didn't have anything on my bowel because then that can cause issues. And it went as well as it could have done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very grateful for that. But I had I didn't come out of the surgery till like 8 o'clock on the... I think it was a Tuesday.
Yeah,
Tuesday night.
Or that's what I mean, more kind of like you knew that the girls would be with your sister or whomever for a couple of days, but it's that thing of you text when you're going in and then when people don't hear from you, it's a panic. Or you were texting for ages because it took them longer to get to you, didn't it? You were kind of, I think I'm heading in now. And then like 6 hours later, it's like still hanging about, still waiting. Still here. But as I said, it did go well.
It did go well.
One of the things that we talked about a little bit was the pressure that people are put under because of, I don't want to call it school gate conversations, but just general conversations that someone always knows someone who was up on their feet in a couple of days and they're fine.
Yes.
And my dad had this with his surgery. He heard someone else at the park had had it, and he, like when he had his hip done, that they were up and back to normal within a week. So when it took him longer, it was harder. And it's a similar thing. I swear that happens with every damn surgery. Is there's always some, it's never the person you actually know. It's a friend of a friend who was up on their feet in no time. So how was all of that? How was the recovery physically and then kind of, the mental side of it with pressures like that?
Yeah. I was in for 2 days, so I came home on the Thursday, but I wanted to come home because even though I felt all right, but I wanted to be at home. I wanted to see the kids.
Mm-hmm.
My sister, we'd arranged for her to move in for a week anyway, so she could be me for the week.
Yeah.
So,
and she did a fantastic impression, to be fair.
She did do a fantastic impression. So that was fine. I came home and I was all right. I mean, I had when I was in hospital, I was attached to a morphine drip,
mm-hmm.
which I could basically press whenever I wanted morphine. I didn't press it. I didn't need morphine. I was fine. I had this.
Such a waste. I'm so angry at you for that. The fun you could have had in there.
Morphine makes me sick. I'm not good with.
Right.
As much as I needed it when I had my cyst pain previous, that was the only thing that got me to the pain. It still made me feel very sick.
It's not for you.
I wouldn't become a heroin addict.
Yeah. It's good news.
Thankfully. Yeah.
It's another update for the listeners.
Yeah. I had essentially an epidural. They injected my spine with some painkiller, which I think lasted 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any. I had paracetamol and ibuprofen in the hospital. I did start feeling a bit painy and asked if I could have some codeine.
Mm-hmm.
But the nurse said I couldn't have codeine. I could only have paracetamol or ibuprofen or morphine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't really want morphine. But I didn't really understand that. But anyway, whatever. So I did actually go to press the morphine thing because I was like, well, fuck it, I might as well have some morphine then. And it didn't work.
Right.
So they kind of came round and I was a bit like, do you know what? Don't worry. They were trying to figure it out, but whatever. So, so I just came home. I had some codeine at home from when I had my pain stuff anyway. So I took that, I think, for about a week. And then my sister went home. And then I kind of, yeah. I was told by the doctors mm-hmm. not to do any heavy lifting. So obviously I wasn't going to do any deadlifts or gym workouts. But I started hoovering and cleaning and cooking dinner and doing the washing and, you know, as I do, because I'm, I mean, to be fair, have I said to be fair a lot?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. Lola and Juno, my daughters, are absolutely amazing. And I'm not going to get emotional again. They're such a credit to me, which I do accept now, but they're so lovely. And Lola cooks the dinner. She doesn't wash up very well. Yeah. And she makes such a fucking mess when she's in the kitchen, yeah. which I don't understand how she can make so much mess, but she does. But they are amazing. And they did really help me. But you like things done a certain way, you know, and so I was just kind of carrying on, but I didn't do anything that felt too strenuous. Yeah. But then I started bleeding and I just started feeling a bit shitty. So I went to the doctors because you can bleed afterwards for a couple mm-hmm. of months, but I hadn't really bled. And this was fresh blood, I think. Mm. Was it fresh blood? I think it was fresh blood. And I was just I just thought, well, I'd rather be safe than sorry. So I went to the doctor and she said, have you been taking it easy? And I said, yeah. And she said, what have you been doing? Housework? And I was like, well, a little bit. And she's like, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You can't do anything at all. You've just got to be...
Again, that's the thing I was on your case about the most, because you were like, no, I'm only doing the things I have to. But it's one of them where it's like, look, the house can be a bit messier for a few weeks. You know, it is what it is. I know it's not easy, but as you say, there's certain things you like that, done a specific way, that can't be a priority at this time.
It was more, if I'd had pain, I wouldn't have done it. But sure. When I felt all right, yeah. I just didn't really see the issue with it. But obviously, it's all internal. Mm. It's all the stitches inside. So she said, basically, I'd given myself an infection and probably ripped my stitches. That's why I was bleeding. Right. So she was like, just don't do anything. In hindsight, if I'd have known I was going to be in surgery for 4 hours... I would have asked Sarah to stay for 2 weeks or, you know, figured it out a bit better. Mm-hmm. But I just really thought that I was going to be okay. Yeah. Where it was keyhole surgery, if I'd been cut open, then I definitely would have known that I would have needed to rest more. Yeah. So I had my mum and dad coming round, my 80-year-old parents coming round and, you know, hoovering and doing some dinners. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, Lola cooked the dinner. It was fine. I think I can't remember how long that was for now. Maybe 4 weeks, maybe.
Because
I think it was, I think they said it was 6 or 8 weeks that I couldn't work out for. So I kind of just rested for like maybe 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then I also, because I had everything removed, so my ovaries and everything, I had to go straight on to HRT because you have to, because I had to wait for 4 weeks, I think, after the surgery before I could start taking it, because I had to make sure that I didn't have cancer. Mm-hmm. Because if you have cancer, you can't take HRT.
And HRT is hormone replacement therapy, right?
Hormone replacement therapy,
because your organs that previously produced loads of hormones aren't there anymore, and like anything, you can't kind of go cold turkey on that. You have to kind of balance things out.
Which again, I kind of felt all right before I started taking the HRT. I was quicker to anger and quicker to get emotional. But apart from that, I was all right, really. Mm-hmm. But I'd started taking the HRT, and touch wood, I'm really all right. I feel really all right. I still am. I feel more sensitive emotionally, mm-hmm. I think. I'm more empathetic. Like, I feel other people's pain more.
Again, it's a tough one to gauge because the world is all the more fucked than it was. Well, there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot more to feel, but yeah, I feel you.
And I've also started microdosing as well, so I don't know if that's got anything to do with.
So what's the microdosing? Tell me a little bit about it. Talk to me about microdosing.
About a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, my friend Naomi, who I have had on the podcast, and I'm going to have her on the podcast again to talk about microdosing because we didn't talk about microdosing this time. We were just chatting and she was telling me about it. She was like, I've started microdosing. I feel like it's helped me with my anxiety.
And microdosing what?
And I just feel a lot.
Can you let me know?
Mushrooms.
Okay.
Yeah, mushrooms. Can you microdose? Of course you can microdose
anything.
You can
microdose absolutely anything.
Yeah. Microdosing and
again, that's why it was good to clarify because people microdose weed and there can be, just all sorts of different things can be microdosed.
Well, this is mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So she'd got into it and she'd done some research and she's now trained in it. She's gone and done a course and she's now like a microdosing coach or something. But she just said that her mind was a lot clearer. So 18 months ago, this was before my surgery and my HRT, I was having perimenopause symptoms. Do you remember after COVID, I said to you that I thought I was getting Alzheimer's and you told me that I was an idiot because everyone felt like that because of COVID. Yeah. But I think it was probably perimenopause. Yeah. So I can't remember anything. I can't think of words. My brain fog was awful. Mm. My memory's always been pretty shocking anyway. But I was definitely having some of those symptoms and I just thought it just sounded really attractive to me. So she set me up with some tablets to try, which I'm quite sensitive to drugs. I don't need a lot of stuff. So it was too much at first. I am very cheap date, especially now I don't drink at all. I'm cheapest date. It was too much. I felt like my brain was being squeezed.
Okay.
I felt fine. I didn't feel like I wasn't buzzing, but I just knew that I'd taken something and felt a bit, ooh. Because I've never actually done mushrooms. I've done acid years ago and I loved acid. Mm-hmm. That was my favourite. But I've never actually done mushrooms, like a lot of mushrooms.
It's the same but different, isn't it? It's
Mushrooms scared me, I think, because it wasn't like when you did acid, you knew how much you were doing. Mm. But mushrooms, it was a bit of an unknown.
Yeah.
And I never knew anyone that did that, so I was never kind of given the opportunity. And they were supposed to really stink as well.
Oh, they taste horrible too. They're grim.
Yeah, exactly. So that was never really attractive.
You can tell how much I loved hallucinating by knowing how picky an eater I am, and yet I would put myself through having mushrooms. For a long time, the only mushrooms I'd ever eaten were magic mushrooms.
Do you like mushrooms in general?
They've grown on me now, not literally. But Ian has got me into them a bit because he's obviously a good cook. So previously, if mushrooms were in a dish, I'd flick them off, wouldn't go for them. But now, or if I'm ordering and I can remove them, I now try not to remove them because I'm like, no, this is just my own, psychological things.
But do you actually like them when you
eat them? Or there's been loads of dishes Ian's done that they're lovely as part of it. But I don't think I'd eat a mushroom on if I was getting a fry up. Well, I doubt I'd be tucking into mushrooms in a fry up. But yeah, as part of a dish, I now concede that they can be a positive. But yeah, anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
So she started me off a bit, and it was all right, but I didn't really feel any major shift. Mm-hmm. And then she said that she put me onto these chocolates, so they've got more lion's mane in them, which I don't think the tablets that she was giving me had lion's mane. And lion's mane is the brain one. It's supposed to be good for your receptors in your brain. I don't really know. I'm going to talk to her on the podcast because I don't really know. She's just told me to take it and I'm taking it. And I feel fantastic.
That's good.
I feel really good. That's great. My brain fog isn't as bad as it was. Generally, I just feel I'm in a really good mood. I mean, I did always kind of used to generally be in a good mood. I'm quite chipper, I think, in general. So I don't know if I've just reverted back to how I was normally and I just feel the difference because I was just in such a shit place for pretty much the whole of
the year, and especially after the surgery as well. I just felt really glum. Like, I didn't feel depressed, but I just felt... Oh, you got
I have. I'll be 2 seconds. Sorry.
I just felt really glum.
Yeah.
And I spoke to my counsellor because I wanted to talk to him about some other stuff, and he told me that anaesthetic takes a year to fully come out of your body. And he said, and also having surgery, he was like, you've got people in your body doing things. He said, that takes a lot. That's a lot to get over. That's like a trauma.
Yeah, but enough about your personal life.
You have to process it. he was like, it just takes a lot. And I was like, I suppose you don't really think about your body in the sense of what your body goes through and how that has an effect on your mental, because my brain's so full of just what I've got to do every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, and if I feel all right, I feel all right. So I'll just go straight on like this. So I've gone back to the gym, love it. And now I've joined this yoga place and I've just probably done too much. And then I was really sick again a couple of weeks ago because I think I need to just chill out a bit and I don't need to be doing everything.
Again, it's the thing I nag you about the most is taking it easy when you're getting back into all of these things. But again, I also understand it, as we were discussing. I can't remember if it was on mic or off mic. But yeah, I've injured myself again just going back to the gym too quickly because I'm like... It is addictive and it is good for your mental health. Like I found, because I've got a little home gym, most mornings I spend some time in there, whether or not it's a big workout or a small workout, most mornings I spend some time in there. So it's been really weird having weeks, because I default schedule my week, like I'll normally record a podcast at 11 rather than any earlier than that, because I know I'm doing a bit of a workout and this and that. So I'm now waking up and just being like, all right, just... wait until my day starts, I guess.
Can you go swimming or anything? Can you do anything? Any exercise, or have you just got to not do anything?
I think with the back, it's best to not really do anything. I've started doing cardio again because that's a nice, easy one. I've got good posture when I'm on my exercise bike and all that kind of thing. I can keep an eye on that and not put anything at risk. So, yeah. But again, we're not here to talk about me. It's weird, isn't it, that anaesthetic takes... longer to get out of your body than Lola or Juno did. Like, how mad is that?
It is mad.
Yeah.
So it's hard with the whole microdosing and the HRT and the everything. All I know is that I feel really good at the moment.
Mm.
But I don't know if that's a combination of everything that I'm doing or...
Yeah.
I just don't know.
And as you say, it's really hard to gauge because... you were feeling low, but you'd been through some shit. So are you feeling low just because of that? I've battled with whether or not to have therapy at a few different points in my life, and I haven't as yet, but it's been because every time I've been low, I've been like, well, I've got good reason to be low. Like, it would be weirder if I wasn't low at this point because this has happened and that has happened. And again, I'm still not convinced it was the right choice at the time. Maybe I should have done something, but it's weird, isn't it? It's hard to gauge those things because if you're feeling down, it's like, well, you've had 2 years of unpredictable pain and then major surgery and a load of other stuff. So, it's warranted. But again, it shouldn't just be accepted either. The fact that you've gone, right, I'll microdose, I'll do this, I'll find ways to help deal with it is admirable.
When I was interested in the microdosing, and I just thought, I try everything. I've tried everything. I've done Chinese herbs, acupuncture, I do yoga, homeopathy. I will literally give anything a go because as long as
I'm staying quiet because this is your podcast. I'm not here to argue with you over these things.
But I think trying to take responsibility for your health and actively trying to help yourself is a positive thing. If I got sick, I go to the doctor, 100%. But I take vitamins, I exercise, I look and see what else is around because why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I would never rely solely on, certain things to make you better.
But that's it. If things work, then they work. It's as simple as that. If they work for you, then they work for you. It's as simple. It doesn't matter if it's real or not or whatever else,
So my sister's now started microdosing. She gets really bad, sad. Is it seasonal?
Affective disorder.
Affective disorders. Yeah. She really suffers from it. She started microdosing. She feels brilliant.
Amazing.
So I said, even if it is placebo, the fact that you feel brilliant is all that matters.
Completely agree.
So, and that's how I... Yeah, I mean, mum and dad have started on it as well. Yeah. Because my dad, they're both getting older. Mm-hmm. And my mum's got a bit of anxiety and my dad could improve his brain a bit. I mean, since he had a stroke, well, when Lola was a baby, so it'll be 12 years ago next month, he had a mini stroke and it affected his mental, like his conversational skills and stuff and his confidence. Mm-hmm. So if we can just find anything to maybe help prop that up a bit, then...
Yeah, it's great.
It's positive, yeah, isn't it? So,
I 100% agree.
Yeah. So at the moment, I feel great. And I am still a bit like, after I had the surgery and people were asking how I was like, I'm fine, but I just feel weird. And I think I just felt weird because I couldn't really believe what I'd been through. Mm. Like over all of it, like I can't believe that I was in so much pain and had to have major surgery and then have my womb removed. Like, because I'm back to normal, I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
It's just all a bit weird, yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's incredibly weird. You've been through a hell of a lot.
It's incredibly weird. I have.
But again, it's...
But I am all yeah. Right.
And that's the positive of it all again. It's why, you know, I've always been a fan of this podcast because it's good that you're all right, but it's important to talk about the whole journey. Rather than just go, I'm all right, there we go, done. Because that's what helped you, talking to people about this on the podcast. Genuinely helped you in your process and finding the right route for your diagnosis and your surgery and whatever else. So,
and it's so nice knowing that you're not on your own. Yeah,
as I was going to say, most people don't have a podcast with which to find all this out. So it's great to have your podcast 100%. That they can hear and kind of go, all right. I can hear these stories and hear these things and maybe, learn a bit there.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was, I am all right. And I wanted to kind of come back and do the podcast. And recently, like I had cupping the other day. I haven't told you this. Have I told you this? Do you know what cupping is? So I had it done the other day. I liked it. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant experience because it was like the blood.
Yeah, so they put kind of hot cups on your body and it draws the skin and the blood up and the removes the toxins and all that kind of silly talk. Yeah. But
So the woman, I'm having her on the podcast because she's got an amazing story. Yeah. So I met her and had this and I was like, I need to have her on the podcast. And then there's been a few other people that I've got booked in as well. So I was like, now it's time now to start this again. And also because I want to advertise the shit out of my business as well. Which I started with my best friend.
Well, let's get into that. Yeah. So again,
I'm going to do a podcast
in the midst of all of this. Oh, you did a great. You've done two great podcasts with her in the past, so people can go back and listen to them now.
With Nicole about her basically getting herself out of her own cocaine addiction, which is still amazes me. And during this time, well, after she kind of started getting herself clean, she invented this head piece that you can sleep in to protect your hair.
Or before we get into it, and you'll get into it more when you do an episode with her, but let's have a brief Nicole appreciation moment. Because again, when you did that podcast, it was a big thing because as stupid as it sounds, I think you would have always said that she's your best friend, but there were certainly points in her addiction that your relationship was really fraught and it was tough because of how things were for her. And you talk about it in the episode. So for her to have got out of that, I think all her dancing stuff is a big part of that. She's found something that gives her a focus and gives her justified pride and confidence and all this kind of thing. And then you've both started a business as well. And it's an amazing thing. Having heard those podcasts and known, Nicole in some way over the years, all the ups and downs, it's all the more impressive a story, if you know what I mean.
She's absolutely smashed it.
Yeah.
And also, she has recently started therapy, and it's making such a difference, and it's such a delight when I talk to her. And so we've got this business. I've been taking care of sending the stock out to people. She did it and sent the wrong things to the people. But instead of her being like, I always do this, I'm so shit, she was like, she understood that she'd made a mistake, but it was okay.
It's human error.
And it's just little things like that. She's just doing really well. She's doing really, really well.
I completely agree.
It's been really hard starting a business. If I'd have known how hard it was going to be, I probably wouldn't have agreed, because she asked me to help her with it because she knew that she couldn't do it on her own. And I wanted to get involved because I think it's such an amazing product and I completely believe in it. So I was more than happy. And plus, I wanted to help her. But if I'd have known how hard it was going to be, and it's not placed too much of a strain on our relationship. We have had a couple of close moments, which, I mean, we've never argued, apart from when we didn't talk for 6 months, when she was in the depths of her addiction.
Oh, that's what I mean. When I was saying there were strains on your relationship, I mean, back then there was points where it was tough. So, yeah.
Yeah, but that was, I felt like I was enabling her if I didn't, you know.
React in some way.
Didn't want her to kill herself. Yeah. So that was my way of being like, I'm not okay with this. But yeah, but it's just very stressful. And this is, again, why I've not really had time to think about the podcast, because we're trying to set up something.
Yeah.
In a cost of living crisis. Yeah.
And it's amazing, though. Again, I kind of interrupted your kind of explanation of what the product is there to just get back onto Nicole a bit. So tell me about what she came up with and what the product is.
So she had hair extensions put in just before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no way for her to maintain them. So she kind of had to manufacture something, because everything that was available on the market wasn't really suitable. So she's basically adapted a product that's already there, but just so it suited her hair type more, basically, is the long and short of it. But I've been using one and it's improved the quality of my hair. I've got heavily processed hair and I'm now growing it because I can, because it's not breaking off anymore. Mm. Juno, my daughter's hair, we used to have crying battles every morning because her hair was so knotty, because kids move around so much in the night and her hair just used to mat at the back. I don't even brush her hair in the morning now because it doesn't need it. It's an amazing product, but I'm not going to go on about it too much.
Because you'll do a full episode, but what you do is the full, you do head covers, head scarves, head wraps and pillows.
Head pillowcases. We've got satin-lined beanies that are just being produced now, that's dope. Which means that they're amazing. Yeah. I'll give you one. And they're really nice hats as well. We do scrunchies, and there's one scrunchie. It's called the scrunchie legs, which it's a scrunchie with like two legs that you can bow or have hanging down. And we also want to take over the world and make bedding and kimonos, and there's loads of stuff we want to do. I want to open a gym and a yoga studio as well.
Yeah.
To do with Proud S. Well, so we're going to take over the world, but it's just...
When you do kimonos, if you want me and Whiffin to come on ball to show the good it does for your body hair, and how we used to wake up, our body hair would be so dry and it'd take ages to comb, whereas now...
That'd be a really good idea.
Now we wake up, it's just flowing beautifully.
And they're all silky, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing and it's exciting. Yeah. But it's a lot, as you well know. Yeah.
All businesses are a lot. Starting a business is a lot. The learning curve of a business is a lot. Particularly, ironically, when it's successful. And you guys have had great success off the back, because it is a really good product. But that means it's harder, because straight away you're into, we're having to ship this amount, or we're talking to this company and that company and we don't really know what we're fucking talking about and we have to pretend we do, kind of thing. I've been in so many of those situations of trying to read the room and give the impression yeah. that you know what you're doing until you do know what you're doing, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's lovely. It's lovely doing it with her because I'm so proud of her. And obviously, we've known each other since we were 16 and she's like my sister, essentially. Yeah. Well, she's, you know, my mum and dad have kind of adopted her unofficially. So it is, it's lovely building something with her. And she is so clever and good at what she does because she's been a hairdresser for 30 years. So she knows exactly what she's talking about. So it's an honour that she's asked me to do it. But it is also, it's, I don't know why I've said yes.
But people can find out.
On top of everything
obviously,
else,
I said, you're going to do a podcast about it. But for now, people
yes,
can follow you on socials. It's Proudess, Proudess, right?
Yes. Well, three S's on the
three
socials.
Three S's on the socials.
Because the two S was already taken.
Dickheads, but yeah.
But we're, yeah, but I'll, I'm going to, we're going to sponsor the podcast.
Great.
Yeah. But yeah, so there's just been, yeah, there's just been a lot going on.
Well, to kind of wrap things up, you spoke about how you're generally a positive person, you're not quick to anger. Let's talk a little bit about the CSA.
Oh, okay, yeah. So
and how that's how that demeanour is tested over the years.
I don't want to go in too much into detail.
Yeah.
But one thing I would like, this, I started this podcast as a single parent to speak positively about being a single parent because if, you know, I was in a bad situation and my life has improved greatly now, it's not always the end of the world. Do you know what I mean? But I would just like to say that however you end, if you do end your relationship, the first thing you must do, no matter how well you think you know the person or how good your relationship or amicable it is, you have to get the child support agency involved in your financial matters, because if anything happens down the line, you can't do anything about anything unless you involve the CSA, and they will only go back a year. Now, bearing that in mind, I still haven't gone to the CSA because they are useless.
Yeah.
If I had involved them from the beginning, it would be different. But now, if you're employed by a company, the CSA can take the money directly from out of your wages. Mm-hmm. So that's it. If you're self-employed, you have to voluntarily pay the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the thinking that if I was going to get paid, I'd get paid. If I, for me to get an agency involved to tell someone that they've got to pay me, they still don't have to pay me because the CSA aren't going to do anything.
Yeah.
And I've known a lot of people that have experienced this, so it's not just me saying there's no point. There's no point. And also, I spoke to my therapist about what's been going on with my girl's dad, because I just needed, I know that I need to let go of it, because the only, this is what I was thinking, when I was ill at Christmas, I had a sinus infection. I had the worst headache I've ever had for like 2 days. I was in bed. And I was just kept thinking, the only stress I have in my life is my relationship with that person.
Yeah.
So I just, but that's on me, because it's how I respond to it. Do you know what I mean? So I just want to let it go and just not let it bother me. But it's like, it's hard to do that when you're constantly reminded daily of why you feel like that. You know, there's always a reminder of why, or something for you to get angry about. So I was just like, I just need to cut all ties and just let it go. Just let go. Whatever's happened, let go of all the money. Just let go. And when I spoke to my counsellor, he experiences this with so many women that unfortunately go through the same thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, you can't win. It's like you fight in a monster. You just can't win. You've just got to let go and just stop trying, basically, which I know is what I've got to do.
Yeah.
But I feel like for me now to go to the CSA, there's no point. I just think if I'm going to get the money, I'll get the money. And if I'm not, I'm not. But there's no point antagonising. Do you know what I mean? That's how I see it will be. It'll be an, so I've just got to admit the defeat. But I do think, if I'd known what I'd know now, I would 100% have got them involved in the beginning. I mean, my friend actually took them to court because she knew how much her ex-partner earned, And she also was aware of how often he had their daughter. And he lied. But the CSA would not do anything about it. She works for a very wealthy person who basically paid for her to take the CSA to court. Yeah. And she won. And then they changed. I'm not in that position. Mm-hmm. And I haven't got the energy or the desire. It's so unfair. That anything to do with these matters, like with your children, whatever, it's all family court. Family court will only recognise the CSA with financial matters, and that's the end of it. I had a long conversation with a solicitor who basically said, I'm fucked. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that's, you know, whatever. But it is so unfair because women are, unfortunately, the ones, in most cases, who end up suffering. Mm-hmm. I'm the sole carer for my children. You know, everything that they have, I'm paying for, all the clubs and all the shit and everything. But there's just nothing I can do to get help with that. Do you know what I mean? And it's so unfair. And that's the thing that bothers me, is the fact that I couldn't just wake up tomorrow morning and be like, do you know what? I'm going to give up my jobs and I'm going to follow my dream of becoming an actor and go to acting school. Because everyone would be, and I, what about the kids? Do you know what I mean?
All right, no need to have a dig at me. Yeah, no, I completely understand. But it's and like, again, it's...
Because I couldn't do that because I've got responsibilities and I can't, I mean, I could let go of those responsibilities, but why on earth would I do that? It's, but that's it's, what I'm like. It's not
it's that thing that for the primary caregiver, and to be clear, 80% of single parents are women. So it is generally a gender issue here. For the primary caregiver, none of that stuff's a choice. For the secondary caregiver, it's a choice. It's to go, well, I'm a bit skint this month, so I can't contribute. You don't have that choice. You don't have the choice to be a bit skint this month and you can't contribute. You need to find the money. You need to find a way. Whereas the secondary caregiver has that. They can turn around and go, it's been a rough time, actually. You can't. It can't be a rough time, actually, for you. Yeah. If you were in that situation, you would have to go and drive for Domino's part-time or do whatever else because you wouldn't have an option. Whereas the secondary caregiver has that.
You know, there's always something. I always find things to do. I've set up this business. I mean, the business wasn't. Obviously, Nicole's a single mum. Mm-hmm. She works all the hours God sends, cutting hair. She's living hand to mouth. You know, times are really hard at the moment, but we will always try and work more. And hopefully, this business will sort us out financially, even if it's just brings us in some money every month. Whatever it does is going to help.
Yeah.
But we both work constantly. I don't have a day off. I work every day. Mm. You know, it's the unjustness. That's what does me, is the unjustness of it. Because it's like, it's not fair that this is the case. But unfortunately, that's how it is. But I need to let go of it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the yoga will help. I mean, I am better than I was. Because I used to think about it all the time and like it just used to wind me up so much. And now whenever I think about it, I'm like, nope, I allow 2 minutes a day of when I just go a little, and then I'm like, no, because all I'm doing is winding myself up.
Do you ever write any of your feelings or angers down? Because I know that not necessarily on the same subject, but with my insomnia, over the years, particularly it's normally based around if I've got a lot on work-wise. And I find if I wake up and note some of it down, it gets it out of my head a little bit. Do you know what I mean? It gives it that process. Yeah. It's the same with, like we've talked before about a Samaritans and my mum's work there. And a thing that they do at the end of the shift is offloading, is they ring an off-duty Samaritan who's there for the offloading, and they tell them how they're feeling and what's happened. And it allows them to leave it behind rather than take it home with them and all of that. So there might be a good process there of some sort of just getting it out. I know it's helped in the past when you've put it all in a big angry email to your ex or whatever, because it's getting it off your chest. But there's probably part of that where you don't need to send it. Like, you can get this off your chest and out of your head by right. Send it to me. I'm always up for reading it. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe things like that could help as well. But again, it's great to hear you in a place where you're at least aware of all of this, if you know what I mean. Yeah, so, and that's a step. Again, it's never as easy. There's loads of it that I sit there going, I've been telling you this for fucking ages, but it doesn't make a difference. it's completely different to hear it than to be able to action it. It's the whole thing of it's far easier to give other people advice than to take your own advice. It's that thing. Yeah. So,
and it is just that I just need to let it go.
Yeah.
I just need to do it. And I know that I need to do it and I want to do it, but I've just got to flip that switch.
But I think it's not even a switch. I think it's a dimmer switch because you're already far better at it than you were. Yeah. So it's just continuing to turn that switch. It's not a case of I've not done it yet. You're already far better at not letting it all get to you. You're on the right path. You continue that along.
You need to do it every day.
Exactly. Exactly.
You keep doing your yoga.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll keep doing my...
I'll try my best. I'm surprisingly flexible for a man of my size, okay? So,
Yeah, I am.
Anyway, is that everything that we've got to catch up on?
I think so.
I hope that this conversation gives you, or the moments after this as it's processing or converting or whatever, gives you a moment to appreciate and pat yourself on the back for what you've been through and got through in the last year. Because this has been like a 90-minute conversation, because it's been a lot and we've skimmed the surface on some of it. So the fact that throughout that, the girls have been doing amazing at school. The girls have, in this last year or two, you can see the change in them and the little women that they're becoming. There's so much to be proud of in spite of everything you've had to get through on top of that. So hopefully you'll be able to kind of have a look and go, fucking hell, that has been a lot, isn't it? Again, it's mad to me that this is a year since the last podcast, because it feels like so much. And yet you've continued to do all this. And yes, I said you've started a business, you know.
But it's weird. It's weird because I loved doing the podcast and I did so much. And then all of a sudden I just didn't do it. And then
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I didn't miss it, but it was just like, oh, I'm just not doing it, and now I'm doing it again. It's funny how you kind of adapt.
Yeah, I tell you what's good, and this is a weird, or no, it's not that weird a comparison. When I kind of stopped on Twitch for a bit because of some stuff I've had going on this past year, but we're not doing a podcast about that. going back to Twitch has been really good because I've gone back with my own mental health as a focus, as a priority. I miss streaming,
yeah.
But I'm not going back going, oh, I have to stream on these days every week, this. Yeah. It's like, if I can, I will, and I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
If I can't, that's fine. And I think that's how you need to approach the podcast as well. We all know that consistency is key and blah, 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 but stopping the podcast was key. For you at the time, you know, it's been really important in this past year to stop. So go back with that excitement that if you're doing it every other week, wicked.
Yeah, that's what my plan is, I'm going to try and do it every other week. At least once a month, I reckon. I mean, I have, like I said, I've got a few more episodes planned to record, and then there's people that I want to get back in touch with that I'd kind of planned to record with, and then it just hadn't worked out, and then I'm just going to see how it goes. But I wanted to tap back into it because I love talking and I do enjoy it, and why not?
I mean, if it gives me a break from long voice notes, then fucking cracking. Let's get on. Thank you for having me on to kind of chat with you about it all.
Thank you very much for talking to me about it with everything.
You struggled with that sentence, but yeah, perfect ending, really.
I really did. Yeah.
There we go.
Bye. Hi. So, yes, that's what I've been doing for a year and a half. I am okay now. So, yeah, but if you have been affected by any of the topics we've discussed, then please reach out to me. I'm more than happy to talk to you about anything and everything. As I said earlier, check out Proudess. You'll be helping support two really hardworking single parents. And so you're not only getting products that will help enrich your life, save your time in the morning. I mean, these are all good things, but also you'll be supporting a small independent business who works really hard and really appreciates it. Every sale we make, our hearts do a little dance. Not literally. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. But yeah, so check us out. Like I said, I'm going to do a podcast. Hopefully it'll be the next one. We need to actually record it, because obviously we're so busy. Busy is a good thing. I'm not going to moan. And I know everyone's busy. So thank you for taking the time out today to listen to me going on about my problems. Big love to you. I've missed this. I've missed you all. I hope you're all good. Let me know what you've been doing. What have you been doing for the last year? I hope everything is good for you. Oh, I got a kitten. You would have heard her purring. That's very exciting. And also, I haven't still explained to you about what happened to my dog, but I will talk about that maybe with Nicole, because she loves a dog. But yeah, anyway, big love to you. Have an amazing day, and I'll see you maybe not next week. I think I'm going to go every other week because it is just a bit hectic now. But maybe I'll just do them as and when. I don't know, but sometimes it's nice to have a bit of mystery, isn't it? It would be a little surprise for you. But if you subscribe, then you will always get the podcast automatically. So wherever you get your podcasts, go to my podcast and hit subscribe. And that'd be a really nice thing to do. Anyway, love you lots. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.